Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray. Roland the Thompson Gunner.
Hi, folks. This is Bob Main, and welcome to episode number 91 of the Handgun World Show, where you've tuned into a practical show. I'm not real technical because I'm not ex-law enforcement or ex-military or even a firearms trainer. I'm just a regular guy that has a passion for shooting and the shooting sports and concealed carry, and that's what I talk about. I just give you my practical experiences. If you want to learn how to trick out your AR-15 or tune up your 1911 to shoot inch and a half groups, this is not your show. There's other good shows for that. I just talk about practicalities, and I got a good show today talking a little bit about anatomy, and I'll get to that, anatomy of ending a fight and self-defense and properly how to use your gun to defend yourself. But before I get started with all that, I want to share a little bit of news. I don't normally do news. There's a lot of other good podcasts out there for firearms news and a lot of good blogs and stuff, but something has particularly come to my attention here that I thought is worth mentioning. It comes from the Second Amendment Foundation, and as you know, during my Freedom Raffle earlier this year, I raised a little bit of money for the Second Amendment Foundation. $300, actually, and you know, that may not sound like a lot, but hey, you know what, if a lot of people contribute $300 to this fine organization, I saw that other people have recently raised more, but if we all do our part and join the Second Amendment Foundation, these guys are behind a lot of good legislation to advance the gun rights cause. They've done a lot. I mean, Alan Gura argued both the Heller and the McDonald cases before the United States Supreme Court. So support the Second Amendment Foundation as I have, and also support the Gun Rights Radio Network. So let me tell you what went on here, a press release. And I'll put a copy of this press release in the show notes for this episode. Acting on behalf of a Georgia resident who is an honorably discharged Vietnam War vet, the Second Amendment Foundation filed a lawsuit against Attorney General Eric Holder and the FBI. Now, this is interesting stuff here. They've sued Attorney General Holder and they've sued the FBI over enforcement of a federal statute that can deny gun rights to someone with a simple misdemeanor conviction. That's wrong, folks, and I'm cheering on the Second Amendment Foundation here on this one, and I'm going to ask you to do the same thing. Read this press release and whatever support you can give to the SAF. Their website is saf.org. The lawsuit is filed as such. Basically, the co-plaintiff, Jefferson Wayne Schrader in Cleveland, Georgia, represented by Alan Gura. Here's the story. It's an interesting story. This goes all the way back to 1968 when Schrader was 21. He was found guilty of a misdemeanor assault and battery because he got into a fight with a man who had previously assaulted him in Annapolis, Maryland. And the altercation was observed by a cop. The cop arrested Schrader and then who was also an enlisted man in the Navy at the time that he got arrested, and he was stationed in Annapolis. Okay, now the man that attacked him was in a street gang, and he felt that that Schrader had entered their, quote, territory. So Schrader had to pay a $100 fine and a $9 court cost, and after that he served a tour of duty in Vietnam and was eventually honorably discharged. All right, now roll the tapes forward to the present day. In 2008 and in 2009, Mr. Schrader was denied the opportunity to receive a shotgun as a gift or to purchase a handgun for personal protection. And the reason that he was denied, according to SAF Vice President Alan Gottlieb, is that until recently, Maryland law did not set forth a maximum sentence for the crime of misdemeanor assault. And so because of that, Mr. Schrader's now being treated like a felon, and his gun rights are being denied. So, this is a tragedy. The man served our country, and he served our country honorably. He served our country in Vietnam. He was honorably discharged. It was a misdemeanor. And just because of a technicality in Maryland law, this guy is being denied the right to defend himself. That's trash. So, man, I'm going to follow this one here. I'm going to follow this one closely. I want you to support it. And again, if you want to read the whole press release, I just kind of skimmed over it. It will be in the show notes. There will be a link to it. And support them. SAF.org. I hope they win this one. I tell you what, they got a good track record. So that's why I'm very glad that you, the listener, voted to support the Second Amendment Foundation from my Freedom Raffle. And so, with that said, that's pretty much all I wanted to cover in the beginning of this show. So let's take just a real quick break here, and then I'll be on with the main topic of the show, Anatomy of Ending a Fight. Talk to you soon.
This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Whenever you see big city mayors campaigning for gun control, rows of uneasy-looking police officers are forced to stand behind the mayors. The reason our police friends are uneasy is they don't buy into the mayor's political scam. The president of the Black Police Caucus said his members believe there should be no gun rationing, and nearly 100% of their membership thinks criminals are able to obtain guns through illegal means. Likewise, 94% of the National Association of the Chiefs of Police believe that citizens should be able to purchase firearms for self-defense and sporting purposes. Maybe this is why billionaire New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg called the 32,000-member Fraternal Order of Police a fringe group, because unlike Michael, cops know who the good guys are, namely you, not Bloomberg. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, let me dive into the main topic of this episode, which is Anatomy of Ending the Fight. The reason I picked this subject is a forum member at the other podcast that I do called Today's Survival Show, where I talk a lot about preparedness. A forum member is pretty knowledgeable on the physiology and the anatomy of ending the fight, and he put a post on there, and I'm going to go ahead and link to it. He goes by the username M. Jolnir, and I think his name is John. It's very good, and so I'm going to give him full credit that he deserves, and there'll be a link. You can check that out, because it was actually a discussion. And by the way, let me take this opportunity to invite you, if you like preparedness kind of stuff, join me over at my other podcast called Today's Survival Show. Link will be in the show notes. So how do you end a fight? You know, that's why we carry, folks. You know, there's been a lot of discussion lately about shooting sports and IDPA and USPSA and training classes, and I've talked to you about close-range gunfighting and other courses out there and so forth. The reason we carry is so that we can end a fight. Now, what does ending a fight mean? Well, some people say, well, it means when you kill a guy, Bob. You know, I want to try to get away from that kind of thinking. You know, this is a practical show, and I'm not advocating killing people. That's, you know, please don't get the wrong idea about my show. I am advocating stopping people. And so when I look at this from a civilian perspective, see, I'm not in military, as I've mentioned, so I'm not out there trying to actually kill my enemy. I just want to stop my enemy. I just want to keep the man or woman, whoever it is that's assaulting me and trying to harm me or trying to harm my family, I just want to stop them from doing it. And whatever I can do to do that, that's why I carry a gun. And that's why I would suggest that you carry a gun. So let's talk about the anatomy of ending the fight. How does it happen? What's the physiology? I think it's important that you understand the physiology behind what happens. And a lot of people are discussing different types of self-defense handguns. And there's all different types of choices out there. Gosh, how many different handguns? And it's great because, you know, as Tom Gresham likes to say, we're kind of living in the golden age of firearms right now, aren't we? The laws seem to be swinging in our favor, and there's so many choices, and manufacturers are jumping on board with so many good choices of defensive handguns. They're really, you know, as long as you stick with a major name brand of handgun, it's hard to make a bad choice. It really is. And we always see a lot of debates over bullet type and caliber and stopping power and knockdown power. And I love this when we see people talk about the one-shot statistics. And even I've been enamored lately by looking at the 357 SIG and its energy transfer and its velocity and so forth. And it goes on and on and on. I mean, man, jump on the internet and just look at ballistics and stopping power and do searches on knockdown power. And good Lord, you'll be reading for a month and your head will be swimming as to, you know, all the information that you're gonna bring in. And you're even going to hear stuff about major and minor calibers. You get jokers on there. You know, I wouldn't carry any gun that doesn't have a caliber that starts with a 4. Give me a break, folks. All handguns suck. They do. I don't buy that argument. I'm sorry. You might not completely agree with me on that. That's okay if you don't. But handgun calibers that start with 9s and 3s are pretty darn good, too, aren't they? A lot of those calibers have been getting the job done for years. It's not about caliber. It's about the anatomy of ending a fight. It's not about a hand cannon. It's not about a mouse gun or anything like that. People fixate on those weapon choices and calibers, and what they don't really fixate too much on is shot placement and where to put your round to incapacitate your attacker. And note I said incapacitate. Note I didn't say to kill your attacker. I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not going to profess that I know self-defense law. A lot of other good podcasts, and of course, the best out there is Masad Ayoub, probably, on self-defense law. So listen to what he has to say on that. I am just going to go for a stop, and that's my whole thought on this. So again, from the private citizen's perspective, I think we need to ask ourselves some questions. What is the main goal of your self-defense fight? I think your answer is to defend yourself and possibly others against those who would try to inflict serious bodily harm or death upon you. Right? Duh. You might say, okay, Bob, yeah, I know that. Well, how do you accomplish that? Well, a sensible person would say, well, Bob, the best way to accomplish that is to get away. Get away from the threat. Get yourself out of the area as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And I 100% agree with that. Get out. But for this podcast, I want to take the assumption that what if you can't get out? What if you're forced into it? What if you're forced into a position where you do have to shoot? For sake of this discussion and this podcast, let's talk about that. First of all, let me cover some beginnings. You've heard things and phrases like proper shot placement and shooting center of mass, right? That's everywhere. Shot placement, shoot center of mass. Center of mass, C-O-M. Here's the challenge, though. If you talk and go out on the street and you find 10 different people and you ask them to define where center of mass is or where the proper shot placement is, you're probably going to get 9 or 10 different answers. Some people are going to tell you, well, it's the center of the torso. Other people, it's going to say, well, you know what? There's this triangle that's formed between the nipple line and up to the notch and the base of the throat. Okay, there are even people that say, well, just hit the whole torso area. You know, and that's one of the things we were taught in close-range gunfighting. Just hit the whole torso. Anything in the torso counts. As I started thinking about that, it was good training. You know, hits count. Let's face it, a hit is better than a miss any time. I understand that. A hit with your handgun is better than a miss at any time. But I think some hits count better than others. And so I don't completely buy the argument of just shoot them anywhere in the torso. When it all comes down to it, you're going to get a lot of generalizations as to where the proper areas are, and you're going to get few specifics. And so I want to use John's post here to talk about some of the specifics, because it's very, very well written. He says, first of all, start by taking a look at some basic human anatomy. And he's going to simplify it for us, and I'm going to share it with you here so that it's easy to understand. Let's talk about the CNS first, called the central nervous system. That's your brain, spinal cord, and your spine. And there's also the circulatory system, which is your heart, your arteries, and your veins, and the blood, sort of like pumps. So think about the CNS, the central nervous system, and then just put into your mind the circulatory system, and then one more put into your mind, the skeletal system. Let's just focus on those three right now, the CNS, central nervous system, the circulatory, and the skeletal. There's a respiratory system, which we'll get to in a minute. The central nervous system, I'll back up again, your brain, your spinal cord, and your spine. The circulatory system, the heart, the arteries, the veins, and the blood. And, of course, the skeletal system, the bones, the support structure, the bones, the cartilage, and what supports a body's weight and ability to move. So, let's start with the CNS, the central nervous system. Now, as I go through this, I want you to think about, if you have to draw your handgun, and see, this is one of the reasons why I say you need to dry fire practice a lot, and practice drawing over and over and over again. Steve Zofi's motivated me lately to dry fire. And you know what? All I've been doing in dry firing practice is drawing, getting a sight picture. Drawing, getting a sight picture. I'm not even pulling the trigger. I need work on drawing and getting a sight picture. And so I'm spending hundreds of times a week, maybe not even enough, but a couple hundred times a week, draw, sight picture, draw, sight picture, draw, sight picture. Because that's important. You know, you have to be able to deploy your gun quickly. And getting quick hits on the CNS, the central nervous system, is very important. So speed. I still am a believer that speed is going to win the fight. At the end of the day, speed and accuracy are going to win the fight. Speed and accuracy. I think if you can develop speed and accuracy quickly, your techniques, you can learn technique. You can learn moving off the X. You can learn getting away from danger. You can learn different techniques of moving and so forth. And if you lost your gun, if for some reason during the fight you don't have your gun anymore, you can learn techniques on how to fight hand-to-hand combat as well. But speed and accuracy wins in hand-to-hand combat too. So the CNS, central nervous system, the brain is the control center, and it creates the messages that tells our body what to do. Pretty simple, right? Think of the spinal cord as the device that delivers the messages from the brain to the rest of the body through a bunch of nerves that are kind of branching off into your body. And then you have the spinal column, and it protects the spinal cord. So the skeletal system is your spine. Your spine column is your skeletal system, the structural support. A person's brain, especially the rear of it. Now, folks, you know, as I get into this, I want to tell you something. As you listen to some of this, especially some of you who are kind of new to handguns, new to self-defense, maybe you're just checking out my show because somebody told you to, and you're just not quite sure if this carrying a gun and self-defense stuff is for you, but you're concerned enough about your safety that you're listening. Welcome. I appreciate you doing that. I am not advocating any kind of barbaric activity, but I have to talk about this. I have to talk about this because it's important that you understand that if you're in that no choice situation. In other words, you got no choice but to shoot. You need to understand this stuff. So I just want to put that disclaimer out there. The brain, especially the rear of it, is the best target for immediately incapacitating the threat. The rear of the brain. Imagine a sphere or a circle about the size of a softball, positioned in the back of a person's head. And think of that as the main target. Okay, even though the brain is not a complete perfect circle, damaging only the frontal lobes of the brain is not a guarantee to incapacitation. A lot of people think that. You know, just hit them in the front of the head and it's guaranteed to incapacitate. Been many stories of people taking a bullet to the front of the head and they survive long enough to continue to do some damage. So focusing on the rear portion of the brain as the target area is probably the most incapacitation and the easiest way to incapacitate your attacker. Once again, about the size of a softball in the back of the head. I'll get to a little bit more details of that. Now, secondary to the what I just mentioned for incapacitation would be the top of the spinal column, where it meets the bottom of the skull. So if you put your finger back behind your head and just find the bottom of your skull and the top of your spine right there and go down about 3 inches or so. That's where the nerves delivering the messages to the rest of your body, that's where they're the deepest, right there. So all the nerves that deliver the messages from the brain to the rest of your body are dense right there at the base of your skull, top of your spine. So think about the target there as about the size of a small V8 can. And if you sever the spine there, it's going to result in a lot of loss of function and control over your attacker's limbs. And damaging that spinal cord, even though it might not be life-threatening by itself, you know, in other words, just the blood loss might not be life-threatening by itself. But if those signals from the brain get interrupted, the ones that are telling the lungs to breathe, the person's going to stop breathing and die of asphyxia. And that's the key, is you want to stop the messages. You want to stop those electrical impulses from the brain that tell your body what to do, and that's a good area to do that. Okay, continuing on, the spinal column actually houses and it protects the spinal cord. And not only does damaging it significantly compromise the skeletal system structural support, but it's also likely that the damage is going to carry over into the spinal cord itself, which results in immediate incapacitation. It also interrupts the signals sent from the brain that control the limb function. So I'm going to take a little bit of a break here real quick, but quick review before the break, and then I'm going to continue with the rest of this anatomy stuff, because it's kind of complex stuff. Understand it. You may have to go back and play this podcast a couple different times, or at least the main topic of this a couple of different times, for it to be able to sink in, because I had to read this several times. I have a hard time retaining things, so I have to go through things over and over and over again. That's why when Steve and I talk about this book, Practical Shooting, Beyond Fundamentals. Woo, what a complex book that is, huh? I'm going to get to that in the announcements here in a minute. But again, the CNS. The CNS is, it creates the messages to tell our bodies what to do, called the central nervous system. So imagine that softball size target positioned in the back of the head as being your main target. Also, think about a size of a V8 can that's resting at the base of the skull, top of the spine, behind a person's neck, so to speak. Those are two very, very vital areas right there. And again, I'm not talking about killing. I'm just talking about, you know, here's a person that's going to kill you. All right, you're in a situation where you've drawn your gun now. I would suggest don't draw your gun unless you're in a kill or be killed situation. And it may not necessarily be that you're going to actually kill the person, but you're going to stop them. You're going to stop them from committing their heinous act. Once again, I would firmly make sure and urge you to make sure you're completely well-studied on self-defense laws and when to draw your gun, when not to draw your gun, any training you can get in that. I hear a lot of training courses that spend the first day or so talking about when you can use lethal force. That's excellent. That's more important, I think, or as important as learning how to use your lethal force. So more on the anatomy of ending a fight coming up real quick. Very fast musical break here, and I'll be back with the next segment. Okay, as I begin segment two, I want to knock out a couple of announcements that I didn't get a chance to make at first. The website is handgunworld.com, and my YouTube channel is Handgun World Show. I am on YouTube, Facebook. I'm also now on Shooters Legion, which is a new, you ought to check that out, shooterslegion.com. It's a new social networking site strictly for shooters. I like it. Shooters Legion. You can find Handgun World Show on that as well, and you can follow me on Twitter. Everything, if you want to follow me, just go to handgunworld.com. All the resources are right there. And again, let me put out a call. Join the forum at the Gun Rights Radio Network, and you can converse with me that way as well. Let me talk about the new support mechanism for my show real quickly. I don't like to make this real commercial, but I squeeze this in there. I have actually decided not to go the sponsor route. Thank you to all of you who responded. One of the sponsors actually backed out, but that was okay because I wasn't super crazy about their products anyway. The other one, I kind of put them on hold until after the first of the year sometime. I just like to remain as independent as I can. So thank you. Almost everybody emailed me and said, Bob, get sponsors if you want. You know what? I've changed my mind. You're more important to me than sponsors. So I want this to be a listener-based show. So if you want to support my show, here's what I'm doing. I'm doing something special for you. I want you to get some value out of it. I'm all about value. I'm all about giving you a value proposition. So I've decided to create a CD or digital download, either one. You can have it in CD form or you can have it in digital download. It's going to be available December 15th. I'm going to put together some unique info. It's going to be about an hour to an hour and a half long. It'll be ready for Christmas time, so start thinking about your Christmas shopping, folks, either for yourself or some other people out there that are into firearms. I'm going to put together some information that I've kind of been saving for a while that I haven't put out in the public domain on my podcast. Good stuff. So if you like this show and you want to continue to support it, I want you to get some value. Some of you have just donated to this show just out of the goodness of your heart. Thank you. Thank you. But for $15, you can get my CD or my digital download available December 15th. Go to the website, handgunworld.com. There's a Buy Now button there. I've also created a page that says Shooters Club CD. Get your orders in now. I think I'm only going to produce about 100 of them. You know, you would think that I would sell as many as I possibly could. You know what? I think I'm just going to kind of limit it because it's kind of something special that I want my supporters of this show to have something special that they can take with them that they've invested a little bit money for, and they've said, hey, I've supported this guy's show, and I kind of got something special. So I'm not going to produce a whole lot of them. Reserve your copy as quick as you can. Use the Buy Now button. You can use credit cards or debit cards or do a check transfer. So once again, handgunworld.com, Buy Now button, and you can read all about it. I appreciate that. Enough said on that. Back to the topic of anatomy of ending the fight. Next, I want to talk about the circulatory system. And John's post here is real good. He talks about simplifying what's called the CS and the RS, the circulatory system and the respiratory system. Now, and all this is going to tie into defending yourself with a gun. I'll bring it all together here, but it's important that we go through some of this science stuff. To simplify the circulatory system, just imagine something. And here's a good analogy he uses. A closed, recirculating plumbing system where you got the heart, that's the pump. You have the arteries and the veins are the pipes. And the blood is the fluid being circulated throughout the person's body under pressure. Now, the body ties in the respiratory system, the RS. It ties it into the circulatory system. And here's how it does that. It's kind of like a filter. The blood is pumped into capillaries in the lungs where CO2 is filtered out and the O2 is reintroduced and recirculated through the circulatory system again. Now, there's a reason this is important, why I'm going through this. And here it comes. Because the most important place that oxygenated blood is pumped into is the brain. And if the blood flow is interrupted to the brain, then the person obviously loses consciousness within probably a few seconds. And if you want an example of this, I've seen this with my son before. My son is actually a pretty accomplished martial artist. He takes MMA. Within about 8 months, he'll have his black belt at the school that he goes to for mixed martial arts. And he's only 12 and a half years old. So, you know, before he's 14, when he's about a little over 13, he's going to earn his black belt if everything keeps on going the way it's going. And a good example on experiencing what I'm talking about is if you have an experienced martial artist put you in a full rear naked choke. Okay? Just have him put you in a full rear naked choke. And don't fight it. Just kind of let it happen. And if it's done correctly, you're going to lose your gross motor function in about 1 to 2 seconds, and you're going to lose consciousness in about three and a half seconds. That's because the blood flow is interrupted. The blood flow to the brain is interrupted. Well, the same thing with a gunfight. All right, in a gunfight, if you stop the flow to the brain by stopping that pump, severing the pipes leading to it, or you reduce the system pressure through blood loss, it's going to help stop your attacker. Now, What's the quickest way to do that? What's the quickest way to stop the blood flow to the brain? Put bullets through the heart. Or put bullets through the pipes that transfer the blood from the heart to the brain. Remember, person's heart positioned in the center, slightly left, behind the sternum. And the major pipes are just forward of and parallel to the spine. But remember something here. To keep in mind that fluid takes the path of least resistance. So if the threat is standing, and here's something I didn't think about. I totally missed this until I read, about the third time I read through this article. This one just kind of went right over my head. So I'm going to point this out, because there's stories of this actually happening in self-defense shootings. If the threat is standing and he's shot, he may lose initial consciousness fairly quickly. All right? And he'll drop. He'll drop to the ground. He'll lose consciousness up front. However, once he's horizontal and the blood is not trying to fight its way uphill anymore, it can now get to the brain easier and faster. And he may indeed regain consciousness for a real short period of time and still might pose a threat. I'll say that again. If he's standing, he may lose consciousness fairly quickly, but once he is horizontal and the blood's not working as hard to fight its way uphill and get to the brain, he might regain consciousness and continue his heinous act. This is why it's a good reason to have a well-thought-out and thorough after-action plan, an after-action assessment. And that's one thing that stood out very plainly to me when I took close-range gunfighting by Suarez International, is the after-action assessment. So many people are so quick to try to reholster their gun when you're training. After you have so-called stopped your attacker, reholster reluctantly. Don't be so quick to put that thing back in the holster. Learn how to properly keep your gun pointed towards your targets and scan. All right? And scan for danger. And then learn how to bring the gun in into what Gabe Suarez called the SUL, S-U-L, into that position. And it's kind of hard to do on a video podcast on how to demonstrate it, but there's a way you can do a 360-degree action assessment without sweeping anybody with the muzzle of your gun. Okay, what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to find a video where Gabe demonstrates that, and I'll put that on the website at handgunworld.com in the videos section. Look for that. That's why it's good to have an after-action plan, in case he gets back up, folks. Now, one of the not very quick ways to stop blood flow is by lack of blood pressure in the system due to blood loss. And some major bleeders are arteries feeding the lower half of the body. And another organ that bleeds a lot that's relatively the same size as the heart is the liver. The liver is positioned behind the lower ribs, and it's the largest on the right side. Now, you hear a lot of talk about blood loss, inflicting blood loss on somebody. Let me share this with you from John's post and see what you think of it. See how effective you think that's going to be. When the chest wall is punctured from the outside, it tends to act as a one-way valve. So when you try to breathe in, the entrance wound opens and air is sucked into the chest cavity. Then when you exhale, the flesh around the inside of the puncture wound closes, essentially making it seal up. It seals up that wound. So the next breath brings in more air to be trapped, and this is called pneumothorax. The same can happen with blood buildup in the chest cavity, and that's called hemothorax. Okay, the challenge, neither one of those is likely to cause rapid incapacitation of the threat. Furthermore, if the bullet fully penetrates the torso, providing an exit wound, or the entrance wound doesn't seal up, the pressure can escape, and it might collapse one lung, but not the other lung, so the threat will still continue to be able to move around until they give up or they finally bleed out. But that can take a while. So even though he may have a lung collapse, he's still got some power to do some things. So think about that. Just causing big holes. You know, you hear a lot of people talk about that. I just want to make a big hole in him. Yeah, sometimes a big hole is not just going to be your only answer, folks. So, you know, those of you that get You know, there was a comment on, there was a thread that's on the forum that, do you believe in slow and fast or big and slow bullets? You know, gosh, that's a never-ending argument, isn't it? I mean, a case can be made for both, but don't just think because you carry a big bore gun that that's it. Your problems are solved, you're done. Because I'm going to get into capacity here in a minute. All these things take come into consideration when you're thinking about your self-defense handgun system. So that moves me into the skeletal system, which I talked about earlier. I set this up by talking about the skeletal system as the last part of it. The goal with using the skeletal system to help defend yourself is what you're doing is you're basically destroying the structural integrity of your attacker's body. Now, I remember in close-range gunfighting, we practiced this, and this was really good. This was a good part of the class. I'll tell you what I'm talking about here, and then I'll tell you what we practiced. The most common skeletal system target area that's advocated out there today is what's called the pelvic girdle. And it is it's sufficiently, if it's damaged properly, regardless of whether your threat's intoxicated or he's big and he's strong, no matter what his power level is, he's going to become structurally unstable and unable to perform and won't be able to support his weight, and it'll severely limit his mobility. Now, it's not to say that he won't try to keep on moving. He might, but it's going to be much, much harder, and it's going to slow him down tremendously. So we practiced shooting in the pelvic girdle area. And this is mainly a close contact shooting target. Now, we practiced this in close range gunfighting. It's where you can't present the gun completely. You may have to shoot from retention. And we practiced that. We were right up close. I mean, we were like 3 feet from the target. And basically, we used our weak hand to give him an uppercut into the jaw, if we could, if our weak hand was free, give the attacker an uppercut into the jaw, just to kind of push him back a little bit. And from retention, in other words, you draw your gun, and basically you clear the holster and you basically point the muzzle towards the target, you've still got that gun tucked right up against your ribs. And the barrel is pointing forward, obviously, towards your target. This is called shooting from retention. Elbows are in tight to the side of your body, and you're canting the gun slightly, maybe 20, 30 degrees to the right, and you're shooting from retention. Bam, 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 bam. All right? And this way you can drive 3-4 rounds pretty quickly into his pelvic area, hopefully trying to destroy some of the skeletal system. We practiced that. We practiced that several times. Now think about what I just said. All right, draw from retention, shoot, bang, 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 3 or 4 rounds into the skeletal area. Well, guess what? I just fired 3 or 4 rounds. If I have a 6-round gun, that only leaves me 3 rounds left. What if there's multiple targets? This is why I like high capacity. This is why I like having 15 or 16 rounds. I've just expended 3 rounds to try to destroy his skeletal system because it was an up-close and personal encounter. Okay, and what you're targeting is you're targeting the hip joint and the socket area. Because there's large arteries there. Femoral artery is one of them that runs down both legs. And that's likely to be hit if you can put enough rounds in that area. And that's going to cause major blood loss and rapid blood loss. Not to mention destroying his ability to actually physically perform or slowing him down quite a bit. So, hope I didn't get too complicated there for you. But quick review before I finish this main segment up. The central nervous system, the circulatory system, the respiratory system, in other words, destroying all of his breathing mechanisms, destroying the pump, in other words, destroying the plumbing, that would be the circulatory system, and then, of course, the skeletal system, destroying him structurally, messing him up, messing up his bones in certain areas, especially the pelvic area. Now, it takes a lot of training. It takes a lot of training to remember all this stuff because, you know, you're talking about stuff that's going to take place in what? Seconds or fractions of seconds, you know, 2-3 seconds, could be all over with. That's why quick reflexes. This has to be a reflexive response. Your self-defense, you know, it's something you can't think about, folks. It can't. Remember the 5 steps in the learning process I talk about so much. Impact, repetition, utilization, internalization, and reinforcement. You've got to repeat this over and over and over again and train yourself so it's a reflexive response so that you're unconsciously competent. You're unconsciously competent. You don't have to think. Unconscious means you don't have to think, but you're competent. You don't have to think about being good. You know what to do. And the key here is to remember that we live in a three-dimensional world. We don't live in a two-dimensional world. A real-world target, a real-world guy trying to harm you, is not a two-dimensional cardboard or paper target. And this is where I do say that you need to go beyond shooting sports and shooting at paper targets if you're going to be properly defended. Because the paper targets are not shooting back, and the paper targets are two-dimensional. They're not three-dimensional. The bad guys are three-dimensional. And you have to take into consideration that if that day comes, I hope it doesn't, folks. I really hope it doesn't. You know, I train and I do this, and I tell you, I'm just a civilian. I'm not in law enforcement. I'm not ex-military. I'm not a firearms trainer. I'm just a civilian, but I'm a civilian that wants to live. And I'm a civilian that realizes that we live in a dangerous world, and I want to live. So I have to study this stuff. And even though it might not be likely that it's going to happen, if it happens, I want to be ready. And I don't think it's going to be very likely that my adversary is going to be standing there, squared off, perfectly in position for me, like a paper target is. And I have to be able to visualize the different target areas of that person's body. I have to be able to see what targets I can shoot in his body, regardless of what position that he is in. Now, I'm not talking about shooting someone from the back. That's a bad thing. Okay, but I need to know where the points are on his body where I can incapacitate him and incapacitate him quickly if it's a legitimate self-defense shoot. So between now and the next podcast, I want you to think about something. Make an effort to visualize where those areas are on people. I'm not going to tell you how to do that. All right, but just try to visualize where all you got to do is talk to somebody who takes martial arts. Talk to somebody who studies martial arts. They can tell you a lot about that. They can tell you a lot about pressure points and areas where you can fairly quickly incapacitate an opponent. Be visualizing the different parts of the brain, parts of the body and how they work. Okay, starting with the central nervous system, and then the circulatory system, then the respiratory system, and then the skeletal system. Figure out where they are, figure out about what your target sizes are, how big of an area it is that you have to hit, and work on that. And I like to place my shots. When I do shoot at a target, I like to place my shots. I don't like to do what's called calling your shots. That's a little bit different. Steve Z and I talked about that. I like to place my shots. I like to put little small groups all over the paper target. Now, even though it's only a paper target and it's two-dimensional, I figure if I can practice placing my shots into a small group, like I'll shoot the upper left first, and then the upper right, and then the lower left, and then the lower right, and then the center, and then the head. And then I'll say, all right, let me see if I can dump them all into the left arm. I'll get one of those silhouette targets, and I'll say, okay, let's see if I can put 12 rounds right in his left arm by his bicep. Now, I may not shoot for his bicep, okay, but the reason I'm doing that in practice is I'm trying to put it into a specific area. And I just try to imagine vital areas on a paper target and try to shoot those vital areas out first. The ones that are going to incapacitate the central nervous system, the circulatory system, the respiratory system, or the skeletal system. All right, so I tried not to go through this too quickly. You know, because this is a pre-recorded podcast, you can always rewind this and listen to it again. And I would say also, before I let you go here on the main topic, there's a good chance that I may have forgotten something. So if I did, and you have an area of expertise in this area, please use one of the many methods to contact me, and let's have a discussion about it. I'd like to hear what you think, because I always like comments. So that's the end of the main topic. I'm going to take another, just a brief break here, and I got something I want to say in closing, and then wrap up the show. I'll be right back. All right, to close the show, I just want to say I hope you got something out of that. And again, I am no medical expert. It's just some good information that was shared by me. Whatever feedback you have, I think I would certainly like to hear that. Jump on the forum and let us know what you think. Also, please don't forget to check out my YouTube channel, Twitter badge, Facebook badge. Also, don't forget about Shooters Legion, a new networking, social networking site for shooters. I'm on that as well. ShootersLegion.com. Check it out. Good stuff. And with that, folks, thanks for tuning in. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening to episode number 91. I normally don't do two shows a week anymore. But, you know, I had that interview with Eric all set up and ready to go, and I wanted you guys to hear that. And then, of course, now I've done this one. So we'll see what happens next week. Got a busy schedule, but you got two this week to get you going. And thanks for listening, folks. I'm Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you next time, folks. Goodbye.
In Ireland, in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Berkeley.